Okay, everybody, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Okay, good morning. Ready to go. This is the Planning Commission meeting for October 22nd, 2020. I call the meeting to order. Everybody's got their mics on.
Don Campbell doesn't.
Don? I want to tap you on the shoulder here, but I can't. It doesn't work. There we go. You're on, Don, I guess.
Yeah, I'm on.
All right. So we do the flag salute. Yeah, let us know the last three digits of your phone number if you're calling in, and let you know that we are live online to make your comments. You will be timed for 3 minutes. If you're streaming the meeting through Channel 21 or the county website, wish to provide live public comment through Zoom, please log in or call in early as there is an approximate 60-second delay between the meeting and live stream. Please remember to turn down your broadcast volume when speaking during the public comment to reduce interference and feedback noise. Okay. So I'll call for public comment by addressing the attendees. Use the raise hand feature at the bottom of their screen or pressing star 9. If they're joining us by phone. Clerk, do we have anybody that is wishing to make a public comment on items not on the agenda?
Thank you, Mr. Chair Brown. We do not have pre-recorded messages for general public comment. However, as the chair mentioned, if you would like to speak during general public comment, you can do so by using the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or by pressing star 9 at this time. And I'll just give it a few seconds to see if we have any requests. I am seeing no requests to speak, Chair.
Okay, so I'll close this item for general public comment and ask for planning staff updates.
Good morning, Chair Brown and Commissioners. This is Alexandra Fowler representing the Planning and Building Department. For today's staff update regarding reportable actions by the Board of Supervisors, Division Manager Erlyn Seawald will highlight the recent board action for the cannabis cleanup amendments. You should have also received a summary of those. Erlen and his team will also be available to answer any questions that you may have. Following that update, I will resume my portion of the staff update to report out on any appeals and upcoming hearing items for your commission's consideration.
Thank you.
Alexandria. Good morning, Chairman and commissioners. I'm Erlen Singwall, Planning Division Manager. So at the last Planning Commission meeting, the commission requested a brief report out on the cannabis ordinance cleanup amendments. So we did submit a memo to your commission summarizing those amendments and some of the background. I also have a couple minute presentation here just verbally. So by way of background, on March 26th of last year, the Board of Supervisors directed planning staff to prepare Phase 3 cannabis ordinance amendments. The Phase 3 amendments included 8 specific board-directed ordinance revisions. Following that board direction, staff prepared draft cannabis ordinance amendments, and these really fell into 2 separate categories. The first category was responding to the 8 board-directed items. That's the category that received the most attention and discussion as it proposed additional restrictions and limitations on cannabis activities. The second category received less attention, and that was the cleanup amendments, which really just clarify and reinforce the department's current practice when reviewing permits for cannabis activities. As you're aware, on June 25th of this year, the commission reviewed the draft Phase 3 cannabis ordinance amendments, which included the cleanup amendments, and recommended approval with several suggested changes. The board considered your recommendation and reviewed the ordinance package on August 18th. The board did not pass the Phase 3 cannabis ordinance amendments, but the board did direct staff to return with those cleanup amendments that, again, just reinforce kind of the current practices. On October 6th, staff presented and the board approved the cleanup amendments only. And just to clarify and emphasize, all of these cleanup amendments were reviewed by your commission on June 25th. Again, they just received a little less attention because they weren't proposing any additional restrictions, but only clarifying the current process. But just as an example, to highlight a few of those cleanup amendments, one of them just listed out the application content requirements for processing cannabis activity permits and for conducting an environmental review on those permits. In addition, they clarified that the 25% nursery area does include walkways, not just canopy areas, requiring that a business license application and background check be conducted prior to application acceptance, describing the riparian area setbacks for the Regional Water Quality Control Board. And one of the items in the cleanup package actually was one of the 8 board-directed items, and that's clarifying that projects with an LOS-3 groundwater basin are required to propose project-specific water demand offsets or participate in a countywide retrofit program for cannabis activities. So there was a question also at the last Planning Commission meeting about the applicability of these cleanup amendments to projects in various stages in the process. So since the amendments really relate to the processing of permits, they'll have limited applicability to an approved project. But the way the amendments are structured, they would apply to all cannabis projects. But again, all of the amendments are really about the processing of permits. So they really wouldn't extend or have any implications to projects that have already been approved. Although, of course, it's important to point out that, cannabis activity permits are subject to the 5-year renewal requirement, and so they would be subject to these new requirements as we process their renewal permits. I also have Kip Morris, who is a project manager, on the line here, as well as Brian Stack, if you have any questions regarding this report.
Thanks, Erlen. That was very clear. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Erlen, this is Jay Brown. At one time, maybe 6 months ago, one of the staff members said that you were working on kind of an economic study of income and expenses that the county was incurring because of the cannabis. And I know I wasn't hearing things. I just can't remember who it was, but I thought it was being done for on our behalf and also the board's. Does this ring a bell with you?
Yeah, so Chairman Brown, I'm sure you weren't hearing things. I can tell you that's something that we're not working on. I don't know if that came up in the context of an individual project that was before your commission.
I don't think so. I think that was in general, a general overlook at basically the industry.
Yeah, so again, we're not working on anything to that effect, but I can check in with some other staff in the department to see if there's anything, anything in the works, or if there's anything additional to report to your commission on that front.
Okay, well, so far we don't know where we are. It would seem if it was a business, you'd want to know.
Yeah, we're not currently studying that.
Okay.
Chair Brown, if I may, Brian Sack with County Council's office. There was a earlier in the year a planned cannabis update that involved the planning department, something that I believe from the tax collector's office and also the administrative office. And because of the COVID-related response efforts, that item was continued. And I'm not sure if it has a date certain for a comeback item, but I believe that may have been what you were thinking of. And there was that plan.
Sounds correct.
But it got continued.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you, Brian. And Arlen.
Right. So if there's no more questions on cannabis, I'll turn it back over to Alexandria to complete the planning staff updates.
Arlen, I was just one point, though, looking at those. So the things that we deliberated over in terms of setback changes and whether single-family residential should be treated differently and so on, those were not approved by the board.
That is correct. Those are part of the 8 board-directed items that were not approved.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
This is Alexandria Fowler again. Regarding appeals of Planning Commission action, there are 3 pending appeals of PC action. However, staff does not anticipate that those items will be scheduled for Board of Supervisors consideration during the remainder of this calendar year. We are currently working with the Administrative Department to schedule those items beginning in January 2021, and I will continue to update you once we have exact dates identified. For your next Planning Commission meeting on November 12th, the following items have been scheduled. There is a conditional use permit for multi-phased cannabis activities, including outdoor and indoor cultivation, nursery, processing, manufacturing, and a parking modification on a 225-acre parcel located at 12415 River Road, approximately 2 miles northwest of Pozo Village. There is also a conditional use permit for multi-phase cannabis activities, including outdoor and indoor cultivation, nursery, manufacturing, processing, transport, and a parking modification on a 110-acre parcel located at 7575 Carissa Highway, approximately 8 miles northwest of the Village of California Valley. There will also be several general plan conformity reports for road abandonment. That hearing will also provide you with calendar dates for your Planning Commission meetings in 2021. For your December 10th meeting, the following items have been scheduled. There's a major grading permit in EIR for the excavation of hydrocarbon impacted soils at varying depths and widths with toe associated along the pipeline alignment consistent with the Phillips 66 Corrective Action Plan, including backfilling the excavations and restoration of the site to the current grade on an 899-acre parcel located at 9295 Zebra Buena Avenue on the portion of the property known as the Santa Margarita Ranch, just north of the community of Santa Margarita. There will be a conditional use permit for cannabis activities, including indoor cultivation, manufacturing, processing, transport, fence modification, and a parking modification on a 22-acre parcel located at 375 Meshula Road, approximately 1 mile northeast of the community of Napomo. There will be the continuation of a minor use permit and coastal development permit to allow the outdoor storage of sea trains in the Avila Beach parking lot located at 450 2nd Street in the community of Avila. There will be a conditional use permit for the construction and operation of a new wireless broadband communications facility with associated antennas and equipment on a 155-foot tall faux monopine located on a 7-acre parcel at 2780 Black Walnut Drive, south of the city of San Luis Obispo. There will also be a track map and conditional use permit to subdivide an existing 5.6-acre parcel into a residential development plan development and residential small lot single family cluster, resulting in 20 residential parcels, an open space parcel, a remainder parcel, construction of single family residences on each newly created parcel, and modification to multiple development standards. That project is located at the corner of Old County Road and Gibson Road in the community of Templeton. And the mineral resource designation amendments will also be brought to your commission for consideration on that date. Please note that this agenda is estimated to go the full day, and the commission may need to consider going past 5 p.m. This will be your last hearing for the year, and this concludes staff's update.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you,
Zandria. Was that done?
I said thank you.
Thank you.
Good report.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Nice to see you, too.
Nice to see you all.
Okay. We've had planning staff updates, and I guess we now get into the main part of the hearing. Ramona, could you announce the first item?
Yes, sir. Hearing item number 3 is a hearing to consider a request by Michael J. Wilson and AT&T Mobility for a conditional use permit. County file number DRC 2018-00130, Supervisorial District Number 5, Project Manager Matthew Ringel. And any members of the public wishing to comment on this item, please use the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or by pressing *9 if you are joining us by phone at this time. This is in order to be ready to be called at the public comment portion of the hearing. Please continue with your presentation, Mr. Ringel.
Good morning, Chairman Brown and members of the Planning Commission. This is Matt Ringel with County Planning and Building. Before you today, we have Wilson and AT&T Mobility Conditional Use Permit DRC 2018-00130. This conditional use permit was originally heard by the Planning Commission on February 27th, 2020, and continued off calendar. The Planning Commission requested that the applicant propose an alternative location for the communications facility for consideration at a subsequent hearing. During the February 27, 2020 Planning Commission hearing, issues were raised regarding proposed project's aesthetic provenance on the hilltop. Issues were also raised regarding the proximity to the western property line. After further review, the applicant has proposed an alternative location to mitigate the Planning Commission's concerns. In my presentation this morning, I will begin with a summary of the original project site, or Site A, and then provide a detailed summary of the applicant's new alternative site, Site B. The original project discussed in February was for a wireless broadband communications facility within a 60-foot tall faux elevated water tank. The project included 12 panel antennas, 36 remote radio units, and 2 microwave dishes. The original project was located within a 1,500-square-foot leased area with a 136-square-foot equipment shelter and 30-kilowatt emergency generator located within an 8-foot wooden fence. Here is a vicinity map of the proposed project. This is Site A, just about approximately 5 miles east of the community of Templeton and Highway 101 and off of El Pomar Drive. The site was surrounded by agriculture as well as residential rural land use. The proposed site is just south of the Wilson's residence. As you can see in this image, this is Site A, and the site is approximately 72 feet away from the proposed western property line. Here you can see another site image showing the 72-foot setback from the property line. And a notable feature of Site A is that when analyzing Site A, the access road going from the primary residence to the site was not a part of the project. Here you can see the proposed east elevation of the original site. And within the site, it included a 136-square-foot equipment shelter. And here is the original photo simulation of the site looking west from El Pomar Drive, seeing the site on the prominence on the hilltop. And that was a description of the original Site A. Now I will start describing Site B, which is the alternative location. Site B is a proposed project for a wireless broadband communications facility within a new 60-foot faux elevated water tank. The proposed project will include 9 panel antennas, 36 remote radio units, and 1 microwave antenna and other associated ground equipment. The project will be within a 40-foot by 50-foot leased area and surrounded by an 8-foot tall wind fence, and includes a smaller 20-kilowatt emergency backup generator and a 190-gallon fuel tank. The proposed project will have approximately 47,300 square feet of site disturbance, and unlike Site A, the project will include grading for the project's access road, utility trenching under the road, and grading within the leased footprint of the site. As you can see in the image to the right, the proposed faux elevated water tank will also require a small retaining wall, as it's no longer placed on the hilltop as the previous version was. Also, notably within the design of the alternative location, the additional 136-square-foot equipment shelter has been removed. Site B is located further to the east, approximately 50 feet from the side location, inside property location, but is still behind the Wilson's residence, located on the same parcel. Here's a closer view of the proposed site. As you can see, to the northeast of the site, a large region of the site has been disturbed, and that will be where the access road will be stemming from. Next, we have the overall site plan, and in this plan, you can see the access road going to the site, which is now further away from the western property line. And to be more specific, the site is now 122 feet away from the side property line, opposed to Site A's 72 feet. Next is an antenna and equipment layout plan. The proposed project has much of the same equipment as original Site A, but it no longer includes a 136-square-foot equipment shelter, and notably, it has a smaller emergency backup generator at just 20 kilowatts. Next is the proposed north and east elevations. The proposed project is still a 60-foot faux elevated water tank, but now the site is no longer located on the top of the hilltop, and it requires some grading, requiring a minor retaining wall. Next, we have photo simulations of the proposed Site B. This first view is looking southwest from El Pomar Drive to the site. You can see it in the center of the image. Next, we have view 2, which is looking east from Redondo Lane, and you can see the proposed cell tower in the left-hand side of the image. And lastly, we have a photo simulation looking northwest from Almond Drive, and you can see the proposed cell site in the center of the image. For this project, a mitigated negative declaration was prepared. While the document was being circulated, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife responded with additional comments. CDFW's comments surrounded the potential loss of critical habitat for the American badger, burrowing owl, and Swainson's hawk. In response to these comments, the proposed project is located in a previously disturbed location where the soil has previously been compacted, and during the project's biological field survey, no small mammal burrows were found to occur on the project site, Therefore, no direct impacts are anticipated to result to any sensitive wildlife species and their habitat from implementation of the proposed project. During the analysis of this project, it was concluded that no portions of the proposed development footprint contain the important habitat suitability elements for the American badger, and none are to occur within the proposed development footprint itself. In response to CDFW's comments, and in the abundance of caution to the species, condition of approval 35 has been added to the project. And I can now pull up a redline version of the conditions of approval and read the added condition for the record. So, can everyone see the redline version of the comments?
Yes.
Perfect. So condition 35 has been added, stating biological. Prior to the issuance of grading or construction permits, if work is planned to occur between February 1st and September 15th, the qualified biologist shall survey the area for nesting birds within 1 week prior to initial project activity beginning, including ground disturbance and or vegetation removal or trimming. If nesting birds are located on or near the proposed project site, they shall be avoided until they have successfully fledged or the nest is no longer deemed active. A 50-foot exclusion zone shall be placed around non-listed pasturing species, and a 250-foot exclusion zone will be implemented for raptor species. Each exclusion zone shall encircle the nest and have a radius of 50 feet, non-listed pasturing species, or 250 feet for raptor species. All project activities, including foot and vehicle traffic and storage of supplies and equipment, are prohibited inside exclusion zones. Exclusion zones shall be maintained until all project-related disturbances have been terminated or it has been determined by a qualified biologist that the young have fledged or the proposed project activities would not cause adverse impacts to the nest, adults, eggs, or young. If special status avian species are identified in nesting within the work area, no work will begin until an appropriate exclusion zone is determined in consultation with the county and any relevant resource agencies. The results of the survey shall be provided to the county prior to initial project activities. The results shall detail appropriate fencing or flagging of exclusion zones and include recommendations for additional monitoring requirements. A map of the project site and nest locations shall be included with the results. The qualified biologist conducting the nesting survey shall have the authority to reduce or increase the recommended exclusion zone depending on site conditions and species, if non-listed. And lastly, if 2 weeks lapse between different phases of project activities, such as vegetation trimming and the start of grading, during which no or minimal work activity occurs, the nesting bird survey shall be repeated. And that's the only condition that has been added to the conditions of approval. Restart the presentation. And beyond the Fish and Wildlife comments, only two additional comments have been received, and they've been added to the project correspondence, and they related to the setback of the proposed site to the westernly neighbor, and those have been added to the comments and correspondence for the project. It's staff's recommendation to adopt the mitigated negative declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions of the California Environmental Quality Act, as well as to approve conditional use permit DRC 2018-00130 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. And that concludes my presentation. Staff's available for questions, to answer questions, along with the project applicant, Jerry Ambrose. Thank you.
Commissioners, do you have any questions of Matthew? And is the applicant have a presentation that he's going to give, or only
the applicant does
questions?
Not have a presentation, okay. But they are available for questions.
Right. Thank you. Okay. Commissioners, do you have any direct questions to staff? at all at this point. Okay. Now I'll call for public comment on this item only. Do we have any comments to recordings?
Thank you, Chair Brown. We do not have pre-recorded messages for this item. However, we do have two requests to speak at this time, and I'd like to take a moment to remind members of the public that wish to speak on this hearing item. You can do so by using the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or by pressing star 9. The first request to speak is by Gillis and Valentine Families. Okay, so for the Gillis and Valentine families, we're going to go ahead and upgrade you to panelist because it appears that you have an older version of Zoom. And so you should have an opportunity to speak now. And if to be consistent with other public speakers, if you could please, we're going to request that you turn off your video. There we go. And we just requested to unmute your connection, and you should receive a notification.
Okay.
That's it.
There we go.
My name is Elaine Valentine. I'm the property right to the west of, I'm the adjoining property west of the cell tower. And everything I said in the first meeting still sort of stands with me. I do realize that you've made some changes. However, what I was wondering is why they don't put it in a completely different lot, like at the end of my property. And so that's basically what it is. It's still to me, no matter, you know, where you moved it, I can still see it from my house. I can still see it from anywhere on my property. And so I was really thinking that maybe the Wilsons would put it towards the back of my, their lot on the adjoining back of my property. And that's what I have to say. Thank you very much.
And we do have multiple neighbors here who'd like to comment on this same Zoom screen, if that's okay.
Okay, if they would introduce themselves as a new speaker.
Of course. My name is Valerie Gillis. I live at 413 Redondo Lane. I'm immediately to the west of Elaine Valentine. And I spoke at the last meeting as well. I'm opposed to this cell tower location, both the original A site and the proposed B site. Reviewing the staff report, I noticed that the elevation change is only 9 feet lower than the original site. The site B is 9 feet lower than site A, so it is still completely within view of all the neighbors who spoke up before, and it would drop our property values by 20%, according to, I'm looking at my notes, according to the National Institute for Science, Law, and Public Policy, we could expect our property values to drop by 20% with dozens of neighbors in the immediate vicinity and visible to this still hilltop location. You're looking at millions of dollars in lost sales value for our properties. Now, most of the neighbors out here have been here for a very long time, and we look at our properties as an investment in our future. This is going to our children and our grandchildren, and so to lose that value is devastating. Mr. Wilson and AT&T are almost insulting us with their refusal to move the tower further than the proposed site B. They moved it from 72 feet off the property line to 122 feet off the property line. Clearly, there is more space on his land to move it further where we don't have to see it and where we don't have to lose our property value. So I would request that the cell tower be moved at least 200 additional feet east and south to a significantly lower elevation where it is not prominent on the top of the hill where my front porch has to stare at it every day from now until forever. A more appropriate location has to be chosen, or we just abandon the project entirely because this neighborhood will not stop fighting. Thank you.
Okay, do you have more speakers?
Yes.
Yeah, hello, this is Matthew Gillis. I'm at the same 413 Redondo property, and I will be short with my comments just to mirror what's been said before. It was under my understanding from the previous February meeting that the commission recommended, per our request, that the tower be moved so it is no longer visible, so it would be a compromise for everyone here. And it does not appear that that was done, that the tower was moved, but it's still completely visible. I mean, a 60-foot tower, and they moved it down in elevation about 9 feet and moved it over on the hilltop. I spent the last day or so looking at the location here on Google Earth and looking at the elevations, and it really does not change the appearance at all from where it was in the previous Site A location. So with the amount of land that we're talking about here at their disposal, it seems like some sort of compromise could be reached where this could be moved to a location that serves AT&T's purpose, but also is not in direct view of all of the neighbors here who have put up their opposition to this. So talking with everyone, we're not necessarily opposed to the project in general, just the locations that are being proposed did not solve, the Site B did not address any of the requests that the commission here recommended from the Site A proposal. So I think that that's our biggest concern here, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
That's all of our speakers. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Chairman, I have a question, please.
Yes, yes.
I'm noticing that we don't have the normal pages in our this time that show the density and the reception areas that are weak and in between, et cetera. And I am going to assume we do not have AT&T representative here, because that would be my question. Is I'm sure they've looked at these other things given our February discussion, and I would certainly like to hear from AT&T as to whether it would work in some other areas as opposed to the small setback that they put on at this time. So do we have any representative here today of AT&T?
Commissioner Campbell, this is Planning Clerk. We do have Mr. Ambrose on the line. And if it's... But
I'll
if you'd like...
His reaction to the complaint.
But maybe we, perhaps we, if Chair, if we could finish public comment and then maybe have an opportunity for the app agent
sure.
to speak.
I think we have finished.
No, we have one more request.
Oh, we have one more. Okay.
Okay. Sorry.
Oh. Very good. So the next request and to speak is from Megan Oliveira. So we will now request to unmute your connection. And you are, your line has been unmuted.
Okay, thank you. My name is Megan Oliveira. I am a resident at 450 Redondo Lane. I was at the last meeting as well. I definitely oppose where the tower is. It's a complete nuisance in our eyesight, and I realize that they tried to make a change, but it's just not effective. The Wilsons have numerous lots behind them, and it was made clear to me that they did not want to cut a road through their properties to lower the value of their properties, which is completely unfair, and I don't see, you know, my grandparents have had this land for many years, and I just don't see why depreciating the surrounding land at my grandparents' expense, why they can't put it on the back hill, which is probably 500 more feet, and it's a much larger hill than what they're showing. But it's been made clear that the Wilsons don't want to cut through their easement properties to depreciate the value of their land. I was also informed by the man who represents AT&T at the last meeting outside of the meeting that this would significantly lower my internet since I am not an AT&T member. And my son is in seventh grade and relies on this distance learning. And already, you know, if that's going to depreciate the value of my son's school, I do not see, you know, I don't see that that's a good thing for him. And it's just a nuisance. And if they can move it to the back hill and cut that road that they're afraid of cutting for whatever expense, I mean, they're going to get a hefty expense each month from AT&T, I'm sure. I've looked at the price. It could be in the $8,000. So I really feel that if they're going to put this tower, they need to move it to the back hill, completely away from our property. And it's a much bigger hill, can give much more internet to whomever, but it just needs to be elsewhere. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the request to speak for this item. And Chair, if you'd like, we can request for Mr. Ambrose's connection to be unmuted. And
yes, please. We'll get into the commissioner discussion part of this, but include Mr. Ambrose. And Mr. Ambrose, why don't you, you need to unmute him?
He's been unmuted.
Okay. Mr. Ambrose, tell us about the sites.
Good morning, commissioners.
Why didn't you look at the alternative sites that these people are talking about?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. First, the last person who spoke made some comment about something that I said about diminishing service. I don't understand that comment, so if we need to revisit that, I can. In terms of alternative locations, and I'm not sure if Matthew or staff can pull up a Google Earth map, but those hilltops on the back of the property are in direct line of sight of three homes that run along the south side of the Wilson's property. So if we were to move it to one of those hilltops, we would be in direct line of sight of three homes. And obviously we run into this situation a lot in these rural areas. It's, you know, where do you move it? Who's impacted? Who's not? But we did move it about 50 feet. The bottom of the facility will be partially embedded into the hillside. One potential mitigation that we're thinking of is there are currently several trees along the western property line. They're about 15 feet tall. We could add some substantial landscaping, height for trees, et cetera, that would help, I assume would help the view if that was their concern.
You would transplant those trees that exist right now, is that what you're saying?
No, I'm talking about adding trees.
Oh, okay.
If that's something that the county or commission would entertain.
How high could the trees be?
Well, whatever the commission would want or would dictate that we plant. Right now, they're about 15 feet tall. We added those details to the current plans to show the location for where those trees are. That's something
how tall can they be and not interfere with your signal? How tall can a tree be and not interfere with your signal?
Well, the antennas are up there near 60 feet, so probably 50 feet. And it's far enough away, depending on what the tree species is, that it probably wouldn't impact it anyways, even if it was taller. Another issue with the hilltops to the back, the engineers would be concerned about shadowing on the hilltops to the north. So if you put a tower on the back hilltop, and the signal is propagating north, you know, the signal goes up and down, and the downside of it would potentially bounce off the hilltops in front to the north.
Yep. Mr. Ambrose, let's talk about the impact of the service in regards to the tower and what that means for the community and in regards to the one comment from the neighbor, but also, I mean, the enhancements or, you know, why you're putting a tower there.
Right. Please. Well, twofold. One is AT&T is providing a wireless broadband option for that area. There may be other types of options, you know, cable, et cetera, but AT&T is also offering a high-speed broadband connection. And the facility would also provide, you know, standard or traditional AT&T wireless services, which right now don't exist technically. You may get a random signal here and there, technically they don't have reliable service anywhere within that surrounding area. One of the commissioners mentioned about the RF propagation maps showing, you know, where the signal would go. Those were submitted, and I believe they were presented at the last hearing.
You're correct. We did have them then, yes.
Mm-hmm. So, in fact, the ability for AT&T to provide service, which, you know, having worked out there a number of years, knowing that we couldn't use AT&T, or people that would come visit the site would never be able to get service with their AT&T phones, would now be able to have AT&T. So, in some ways, there's a competitive ability for consumers to have more than just the Verizon choice.
Also, I should add that AT&T is the sole provider of FirstNet. That's a separate frequency band that's set aside for first responders only. AT&T has the national contract for that. So in the event of a fire or other type of emergency, this would provide that FirstNet service to first responders.
Did you guys talk about a tree as opposed to a water tank? I mean, preference there? I water tanks, to me, I like them just probably better than trees, but is a tree a possibility?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. I believe that was explored early on, and in between staff and us, that they decided the water tank was a better option. But yes, the tree type design is available, or could work.
I mean, looking at that hill, I can't imagine one of the faux trees being anything but really protruding. And if indeed this was a water tank that would be utilized, I have to ask the community, would they be in up in arms about it if we really had a water tank out there that had water in it as opposed to towers? That kind of has to be considered in the fact that what we're trying to do is provide this service, which required, it's needed, and try to do it in the most appropriate settings type. And
yeah.
I think, you know, kind of fits that.
If you notice in one of these pictures, there's a water tank in the foreground, much like the one in the background. It's not on stilts, but still it looks like a water tank.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I have a question for Mr. Ambrose. Could you specifically address the concern about whether this particular facility would dampen or interfere with other internet providers?
No, it would not. AT&T has its own separate frequencies.
Okay. So the concern about internet in somebody's house using Verizon wouldn't be affected?
No.
Okay, thank you.
This is Matt Ringel with County Planning and Building. When reviewing Site A, we did analyze the look of a tree instead, and I do have a photo rendering of what a tree would look like on the hilltop. This is in location of Site A, looking southwest from Elkmar Drive. So a tree still would be prominent on the hillside.
But in consultation with the neighbors, they preferred a water tank. Is that true?
A water tank was, at the end of the day, we decided on a water tank, correct?
You decided. I guess I'm wondering if what the neighbors think of trees or water tanks. And I don't know. If I guess I'll reopen to the local neighbors if they just want to put in, you know, 30 seconds of comment about a tree or a water tank.
Chair, we do have them with their hands raised. So we will begin with Ms. Megan Oliveira. We will now attempt to unmute your connection.
Yeah, and this is just a question about the tree or water tank issue.
Yes. So are there other options like a windmill or something more normal? And I mean, the fact, yeah, I think it's just it irks me that this is even happening.
Okay. Thank you.
I just don't even agree with it.
Okay. Anybody else? You're talking tree and water tank.
Yes, Chair. We will now unmute the connection of the Gillis and Valentine families.
Hi, this is Valerie Gillis again. Thank you for opening it up for a comment. Yeah, I think we all agree we prefer the water tank. However, regardless of what the cell tower looks like, we would still be required upon listing our house for sale to list it as a hazard and nuisance, and we would therefore lose property value. It doesn't matter what it looks like. So to address the question about whether or not we would be up in arms about a real water tank going in, we would not, although in our area, of course, we never raise our water tanks like that. Water tanks are usually maybe 10 to 15 feet tall, not 60 to potentially 80 feet tall. So, no, we would not be up in arms over a water tank, though, to address the question directly, because we don't have to list a water tank as a hazard and nuisance on our sales report if we were to sell our properties. We would not lose 20% of our sales value for a true water tank. We lose 20% of our sales value for a cell phone tower that's within line of sight and close proximity to our properties, and that is what this is. Whether it looks like a windmill or a water tank or a tree or an fridge.
All right. Anybody else to comment about water tank versus tree? Sounds like water tank probably is preferred. So, commissioners.
We in discussion now?
Yeah, we are.
Chairman, are we in discussion now?
Yes, we are.
Okay. I'll make a couple of comments. You know, I'm an old timer and not, as you can tell, trying to get on Zoom's hard enough for me, but I'm not a techie, but I have a daughter that sits here daily and hasn't been to her office in Dallas, Texas for 6 or 8 months. She couldn't live, and there's many, many companies that could hardly survive without people sitting at their laptop with their big screen and conducting their business. I've been in the real estate appraisal business in this area right down the street from them for over 45 years, and I take exception to this 20% off the value of property. I don't buy that one bit.
So, well, I was going to, Don, I was going to say that, you know, at this point in time, it's there's a mad dash out of the cities to come to places like ours.
Absolutely.
When you have the capacity to do your work online, and I appreciate the neighbors' concerns, and of course we I'm glad that they're speaking out and all these things that we need to think about. But I think that the benefit outweighs the getting used to it, and the fact that Mr. Ambrose is even considering putting in some trees if the water's there and all of that. But if they're willing to do some visual screening of some sort, that might really just make all the difference.
And I, too, I agree. We just had AT&T tower put in near our ranch in Monterey County, and what a godsend that was. And a similar discussion with people, but overall it's been welcome to, you know, the 20th century for us. So,
We haven't mentioned today the federal mandate on some of this AT&T activity is it has to be done according to the federal whatever.
Yeah, the G5. I think there is a G5 mandate.
Yeah, the G5, correct.
Mr. Matari, did you have a comment?
Nothing that would be different from what the other commissioners have said.
Okay. Do I have a motion?
Do we want to add the condition regarding the screening?
It's been offered, and maybe that'll take some of the sting out of it. So, yes. Matthew, can you do that without a lot of input from us?
So I would ask for a 5-minute recess so I could add the condition of approval.
Okay. All right. We'll grant a 5-minute recess. Thank you.
We will resume at 10 o'clock. Staff, the meeting will rejoin shortly. Thank you.
Okay, staff, what do you have?
This is Matt Ringel. Just pulling up right now. There we are. Can you see the conditions of approval?
Yes.
Perfect.
Mr. Ringel, this is planning staff. Okay, you just did the one page. Perfect. And if you could perhaps zoom it in just slightly so the font appears larger. There we go. Perfect. Thank you.
We added condition number 36. At the time of application for construction permits, submit a revised site plan to the Department of Planning and Building for review and approval. The revised site plan shall indicate the following and development shall be consistent with the revised and approved plan. A, landscaping with large trees and shrubs along the back of the western property line to help screen the wireless facility from the neighboring property to the west.
Well, that looks like it should do it. Commissioners, have we conditioned this to the point where somebody can make a motion? Commissioners, are we ready to make a motion?
I'll go ahead and do that. I move that we adopt the mitigated negative declaration in accordance with applicable provisions of the EQA and approve minor use permit DRC 2018-00130 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B and including the paragraph that we just added.
Okay.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Ramona, would you call the roll, please?
And I'd also like to point out the added condition 35, biological.
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Ortiz-Legg?
Yes.
Commissioner Moltari?
Yes.
And Chairman Brown?
Yes.
The motion passes.
Thank you.
And I would just remind the neighbors that if you think we got it wrong, you can appeal our decision to the board.
As always. Okay, second item on the agenda, Ramona.
Hearing item number 4 is a hearing to consider a request by Steve Olson of Kyler Canyon Vineyards, LLC, for a conditional use permit. County file number DRC 2019-00070, supervisorial district number 1, Holly Phipps, project manager. And if there are any members of the public wishing to comment on this item, please use the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or by pressing *9 if you are joining us by phone at this time. This is in order to be ready to be called at the public comment portion of the hearing. Please continue with your presentation, Ms. Phipps.
Thank you, Ramona, and good morning, Chairman Brown and members of the Planning Commission. Holly Phipps, Project Manager. Before us today is a request by Steve Olson of Tyler Canyon Vineyards, LLC, for a conditional use permit to allow for the construction and operation of approximately 8,500 square foot winery facility that will include two buildings. Building A, called the Tasting Room Building, is a one-story, 1,966 square foot building that will include a 978 square foot tasting room, 298 square foot case goods storage room, wine pickup area, foyer, restrooms, and a 1,465 square foot outdoor covered porch. Building B is a two-story, 6,608 square foot wine production and barrel storage building that will include a 2,451 square foot barrel storage room, 2,659 square foot tank room, office, break room, kitchen, restrooms, and a mezzanine level with a lab and additional storage space. The building will include a 2,410 square foot outdoor covered area. Annual case production is 10,000 cases. The project does not include any special events. However, the applicant does wish to participate in wine industry events as allowed per the ordinance. The applicant is requesting a modification of ordinance standards to locate the winery with a tasting room 1.97 miles from the nearest collector road, which is Pine Street near Paso. San Luis Obispo County Code states that the principal access driveway to a winery with public tours, tasting rooms, or special events is to be located on or within 1 mile of arterial or collector road. However, this standard may be modified through a conditional use permit if it can be proven to be unnecessary and the project meets all development standards. Finally, the project will result in approximately 2.75 acres of site disturbance on a 53-acre parcel. The proposed site is located at 1535 Tyler Canyon Road, as I stated earlier, 1.97 miles west of the city of Paso Robles, and I have highlighted that road in yellow. The proposed project is located within agricultural land use category. There are two legal parcels, and the parcel site encompasses both legal parcels. So the project site is one site for the whole project. Here we have a look at the aerial view of the project site. The development would be in this area here that was previously disturbed and had mobile homes located in this, had a mobile home located here. Here we are looking at the overall site map. The project would be accessed via Tyler Canyon Road, access improvements to the driveway. Access driveway would need to be in compliance with CAL FIRE standards, turnarounds, roundabouts. Here, looking at the floor plans, the ag processing and storage building is here on the left. Up top here, we have the catering kitchen, we have office, we have restrooms. In the middle of the building, we have the tank storage room, our processing area, and then in the bottom here, your screen, we have the barrel storage. To the right, we have the tasting room building. We have the case goods storage good area here, left, and then the entrance. We have restrooms, and in the middle here, we have the tasting room area. Looking at the elevations, we see building A, the approximate 1,900 square foot tasting room building. They are proposing a height of 27 feet. In this elevation, we see the 6,600 square foot two-story wine production and barrel storage building. The proposed height is 35 feet. And as I mentioned, the two-story will include a mezzanine deck for extra storage and a lab. The county has received comments from neighbors expressing concerns with the proposed project. The main issues that were raised, Tyler Canyon Road and Arbor Road is unsafe and requires road improvements. The winery should be limited to only processing grapes from grapes grown from on-site. Industry-wide events could result in noise from amplified music. and the project is located greater than 1 mile from an arterial collector road. Therefore, the project's days and hours of operation should be restricted. The project was referred to Public Works and CAL FIRE. No significant concerns were identified. The tasting room will result in one peak hour trip. In regards to limiting the project to processing of grapes grown on site, I would like to note that the surrounding ag processing facilities were not restricted to only the processed grapes grown on site. As far as noise, the applicant is not requesting any outdoor amplified music. Operational hours in the land use ordinance are not defined when a winery with a tasting room is located greater than 1 mile from an arterial collector road. This distance requirement allowing a tasting room may be modified through a conditional use permit if it can be proven that it's unnecessary and the project meets all other development standards. Here we have a bird's eye view of the surrounding properties. To the northwest, we have Kyler Ridge Olive Oil. To the north, we have TH Wine Estate Wines. And to the south, we have Ecluse Wines. And the proposed project is here in the middle where my arrow is. Here is just a brief overview of land use entitlements for ag processing facilities in the area. They all have tasting rooms with limited operational hours, no special events. The wineries have industry-wide events, and all are allowed to process grapes grown off-site. A lot of people ask me, how are special events defined? In the ordinance, the winery ordinance, it states if there's greater than 50 people, that will be an event, special event. If it's advertised, it's an event. Less than 50 and not advertised, this is not a special event. And then we have the industry-wide events, which are like the weekend pickup parties and come get to know the wineries and maybe get in some new members. Wine pick industry-wide events are not regulated by the land use ordinance. With that, staff is recommending adoption of the mitigated negative declaration in accordance with CEQA and requesting approval of conditional use permit DRC 2019-00070 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. In virtual attendance today is Jamie Jones from Kurt Consulting. She will be giving a presentation and she will be announcing the other members of her team that can help are here to help answer questions. With that, that concludes staff presentations and we're available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. So let's hear from the applicant.
Before, can I ask a couple of questions of staff?
Sure.
Thank you.
You'd like me to stop sharing my screen?
Actually, no. I'd like you to go back, Holly, to the one that showed what the neighboring, the restrictions on the neighboring operations in terms of where you showed the hours of operation for the oil, olive oil place and the other wineries.
Yes. Oh, crap.
Yeah. And I do have another question for you. It's kind of more of a technical one.
Can you see my screen?
No.
No.
Yeah, that one. Thank you. Maybe if you could just leave it up there for a minute or two so we can take a look at that. That wasn't in our staff report. My technical question is that Public Works, in their comments on this project with regard to water state, the site is within the Atascadero groundwater subbasin and is therefore subject to sustainable groundwater management SGMA. However, the sustainability agency responsible has not completed the planning efforts and will define the need for groundwater mitigation requirements. In the interim, consideration of the project's impacts on the groundwater basin should be included in the CEQA analysis. So I went to the CEQA analysis, which is the initial study at least, and maybe I just missed it, but in the initial study, it just repeats that exact same paragraph. that the groundwater basin should be included in the CEQA analysis, but I didn't see it in the CEQA analysis, and I might have just missed it. I'm sure you guys have thought about water. But before we can approve the neg deck, I think we need to respond to that somehow.
On page 69 of 83 of the mitigated NEGO declaration, there's a chart with the proposed water usage and existing water uses and water that was taken out of the mix because they were getting rid of the mobile homes. Okay. And it's on that page, it states what the new net demand is annually.
Okay.
And we also have staff available to help answer questions. Kirk Consulting, they have their water specialist that can help answer those questions.
Okay. All right. Thanks for pointing that out. I just didn't see it. Thank you.
I have a question, though. Thank you, Michael, for introducing it. Isn't this awfully far north and west to be in the Atascadero sub-basin?
I just went with what Public Works had in the referral response. I can double check that in GeoView and get back to you.
It just doesn't seem to click in my mind that Atascadero subdivision somewhat further south than where we're talking about. But maybe it is, and I just wasn't aware of it.
Okay.
Let me stop sharing my screen.
Chair Brown, we do have Mr. J.R. Beard from Public Works requesting to speak.
Okay.
Hi, this is J.R. Beard with Public Works. I just wanted to address the comment there about the Atascadero area, Salinas Valley groundwater basin. So basically, when we make that as a comment into our recommendations and conditions, essentially what we're looking at is our GeoWorks database, which has the boundaries shown, and that's what dictates our comment to that. So in this specific location, that is just inside of that boundary, and so that's why we made that comment. Thank you.
Okay, I guess we can move on to comments by the applicant.
Thank you, Chair Brown. We do have Jamie Jones that will be presenting a PowerPoint. There you go. Ms. Jones, you are, if you could unmute your connection. There we go. You are live.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. I am Jamie Jones, and I'm very excited to be here as the representative for the project team. This property is a 53-acre site. It's zoned agriculture. It is in the Williamson Act, and it is it's important to note that it is consistent with its Williamson Act contract, and it's located just west of the city of Paso Robles. The site consists of two parcels. The eastern parcel was previously developed with two mobile homes, which have since been removed. There is an existing single-family residence, as well as a barn located along Arbor Road. The project area is highlighted in yellow. There are 26 acres of vineyards on the property. The vineyards have recently been replanted, and the irrigation system updated and modernized to maximize water efficiency and conservation. The project includes a new production winery shown as building one on this site plan and the second building that supports a small tasting room that's identified as building two. The project includes a request to produce up to 10,000 cases of wine annually. This is a normal request for our boutique-sized wineries. This is what we request for all the small wineries. The project does not include a request for special events, but it does include a modification to the location standard for winery tasting rooms, and that's why we're before your commission today. The Olsons purchased this property in 2017. They purchased it because of its location in the Willow Creek AVA. The Willow Creek area is well known for its high-quality grapes, which many of the top-scoring wines from Paso Robles are made from grapes in the Willow Creek area. Between 2017 and 2018, Steve and his team started the initial planning efforts for the winery project. The original project design is much different than what you're seeing, what you're considering this morning. The original project design included four buildings noted as buildings A, B, C, and D on this plan. And the tasting room in the original design was noted as building C. The original project design included two entrances onto Kyler Canyon Road, internal circulation, an art installation, and extensive outdoor use areas. We shared these plans with the neighbors through a letter notification and an open house in 2018. We, as normal, received a variety of input and lots of questions. Some people loved it just as it was, but some of our neighbors were concerned with the scale, whether or not we plan to include an event program, and the potential for noise impacts. The ownership team spent the next 6 months thinking about and incorporating the input received from the neighborhood into a revised and much reduced project. In March of 2019, we notified the neighbors of our pending conditional use permit submittal and the project changes. As you will see on the next slide, the neighbors' input was incorporated into the project before you this morning. The overall footprint was reduced, the number of buildings reduced and consolidated, visitor areas and parking areas minimized, the buildings were reoriented, and the tasting room shifted so it's now located west of the winery building. We did not include a request for special events. And so really what you're seeing today is a project that is really a boutique winery focused on producing premium wine and providing an intimate visitor experience. The goal is to provide an elevated visitor experience, one that caters to fewer customers that are captured for a longer period of time. As you can see on this site plan, the overall project has been significantly reduced. The development has been consolidated into these two buildings. And this is where there was previous development, structural uses, a mobile home, and some outbuildings. The tasting room was shifted to the west side of the winery. The existing residents retained, and there's only one site entrance onto Kyler Canyon, and that's located. It's an existing access almost across the street from the entrance to Ecluse Winery. The art installation and all the stuff you saw here on the previous plan was removed, and the internal connections were eliminated. The property is surrounded by complementary and compatible uses, including Ecluse Wine to the north, Terry Hogue Estates to the south, Canyon Villa Inn to the west, and other wineries along Arbor and Live Oak Road. The winery buildings can be seen from Arbor Road. However, the owner kept the buildings in the areas previously developed with structural uses and incorporated an agrarian design. A landscape plan has been provided to further soften the interface with the public roads. Walking through the floor plans, Building 1 is a production-focused winery. It's all the uses you would expect to see in a production winery: barrel storage, tank room, office, and a break room. This building does include a kitchen. The kitchen is a small catering kitchen. This is an industry norm these days based on health department requirements for even cutting a simple piece of bread. The tasting room is very small, 978 square feet. There's a small tasting bar, and with most of it set up with table seating, because table service, if any of you have been out wine tasting lately, it's becoming the norm for the higher-end wine experience. It allows for personalized customer experience and allows the customer to taste wine in a relaxed and unrushed manner. You're not reaching over someone that's in front of you with a tasting bar trying to get another taste of wine. There's also some limited outdoor areas for tasting under the covered patio, shown here in green, and I think COVID has reinforced to all of us the importance of having access to limited outdoor areas for our winery and tasting room. The elevations demonstrate the agrarian architecture that have been incorporated into the project design. The project will utilize the existing driveway on Kyler Canyon Road, a county-maintained road. The driveway will be improved and upgraded, and some of the existing improvements will be required to be relocated. Public Works has reviewed the project and has no concerns with the project based on this specific project description related to our project. We have completed a roadway safety analysis as well. And it's important to understand that this project, it's intended to capture the visitors that are already coming out to visit our neighbors. We're going to be capturing likely the same customers. The application includes a request to produce up to 10,000 cases of wine. This is the metric that we're using for all applications that we submit for small wineries. The grapes grown on the site will be the primary source of the fruit used to make the wine. This will be an estate winery. However, like most of the other wineries in the county, the operation intends to bring in grapes from other farms from the Paso area. This is the industry norm and allows for wine diversification. And you know what it does is it keeps grapes in our county. I talked to Joel over at Wine Country Alliance and said, how many grapes are still leaving our county today? And he said between 30 and 40% of the grapes are still leaving our county. So this is another means to keep a market for grapes here. We don't want that economic leakage. And bringing in that limited amount of traffic doesn't translate to many trips. I've seen in some of the correspondence, it's going to generate a lot of traffic. It's really less than 20 trips a year. And these are coming in on smaller, I'll say, I think Mr. Campbell will understand a 300 series pickup with a flatbed or maybe a trailer behind it, but not a lot of trips coming in based on the offsite grapes. The project does include a request to modify the locational standard for winery tasting rooms. The finding can be made to support the modification. The location standard in this instance is unnecessary based on our project description, the size and scale of this project, and the nature of the area and the surrounding properties. The tasting room only generates one peak hour trip. We're not requesting events. The existing road system is designed to accommodate the limited traffic generated by the project, and we're located in an area that's developed with similar visitor uses, so we're going to have capture between those uses. We're not located on a dead-end road, and we're less than 5 minutes to town. We're pretty close to the city of Paso Robles. And the project meets the intent of the locational standard because it's not a distant outlying property. It is surrounded by uses. You can see on this slide, we imported the Wine Country Alliance maps. You can see the uses going on around us. It's a very small tasting room with an intimate tasting experience. We're not proposing events or large number of people. And I go back to the standard was adopted in 2001. And the tasting experience was different in Paso Robles in 2001. We might remember tourists would come in buses, and you'd come in and try to hit 5, 6, 7 wineries at a time with lots of people. And that's not what it is today. Our Paso Robles has matured, and the tasting experience has dramatically changed. So we don't see this isn't the kind of project that the standard was created to prevent. Public Works has reviewed the project, and they joined the planning department in supporting the application. It's also important to note and highlight the project's consistency with the agriculture element. The project is consistent with the ag policies related to wineries and winery processing uses. Ag Policy 6 encourages and supports limited visitor-serving uses, and Ag Policy 8 encourages the development of compatible production facilities. The county's agriculture department reviewed the project and found the project consistent with the county's agriculture element. And I have to mention our neighbor support. We'd like to acknowledge and thank our neighbors that have supported us on this journey. And we've got the Carters and the Locks and the Ducey's, Verander and Anita Saheed, Kevin McDonald, the Beckett's, the Bones, the Saccarelli's, the Ferlotti's. We just really appreciate those that have come to support the project. And in my concluding comments, I'd just like to reinforce that the project meets the intent of the locational standard for wineries, the tasting rooms. This project is a modest boutique winery producing premium wine. It's going to have an intimate visitor experience focusing on high quality wine, education, and farming. The connection to the farming and the wine production is a very important part of the visitor experience. Once we connect those people to the land, when they leave, they remember that, and that becomes part of their consumer decision when they go back to the grocery store. The project complements and is consistent with neighboring uses. Its location is unique in its close proximity to Paso Robles, to downtown Paso Robles, and it's consistent with the policies contained in our county documents and including our winery ordinance standards. And it's supported by all county referral and reviewing agencies. And with that, we'd like to request that the county adopt the mitigated negative declaration prepared for the project. We would like to note that The only impact identified in the MND was related to nesting birds, and so there was a mitigation required for pre-construction surveys, and that's been incorporated into the project conditions of approval. And we would request the commission approve the conditional use permit subject to the findings and conditions. And we have a big project group here for you today, so they're all ready to raise their hand and answer questions if you have them. And that completes my presentation, and I'm available for questions.
Okay, thank you, Jamie. Let me turn it over to commissioners first to hear. Hold on.
Jamie, I have a question, Jamie. In reading this, you're talking about special events or outdoor things. Didn't I read somewhere that they wanted to participate in industry-wide events, not necessarily amplified music on their own or weddings or whatever? Can you clarify that for me, Jamie?
Sure, I'd be happy to. That's a great question, Commissioner Campbell. Our application does not include a defined special event program. That being said, the current ordinance allows what we call marketing activities, and that is it gives all wineries, whether you have a tasting room or not, the ability to participate in the industry-wide event weekends. Those industry-wide event weekends are typically those three weekends a year, the Zen Fest, Harvest Fest, and May Fest, where we have the open houses. So we would like to have the ability to participate in those activities as is that rights given to all wineries in our county. But we're not requesting, we're not looking to do weddings. We're not looking to do big parties. We're not looking to do the amplified music. You see wineries come before your commission sometimes where we have a specific request for amplified music. And that's a whole different process. That's a whole different section of the ordinance. And we're not requesting, an event program.
Okay. Thank you.
Jamie, another slight correction here. There's always somebody going to want to snitch on somebody, I would think. And most people use gooseneck trailers to haul small amounts of their product to the wineries. My son-in-law's got two 450 pickups.
Sorry.
So maybe you want to up that 300 to 450 series.
I will do that next time. Thank you, Commissioner Campbell. I got my truck wrong. Sorry.
Okay, any other questions from commissioners? I think we probably, before we go to the public comment period, we should take a short break. I see people are desperately looking around here. how about 10:45?
Perfect.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Commissioners and staff, we will now mute your connection.
Like Jamba.
Thank you. Okay, welcome back, commissioners. We're on the Kyler Canyon item, and we have just started to get into public comment before we left for breaks. So that is where we are. And do we have public comment recordings?
Thank you, Chairman Brown. We do not have pre-recorded messages for this item, but we do have several requests to speak. And at this time, I would like to remind members of the public that wish to speak on this hearing item can do so by using the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or by pressing star 9 at this time. Our first request to speak is Rogan Tomquist. You will receive a notification that the host is requesting to unmute your connection. And Mr. Tomquist, you're live and you have 3 minutes to speak.
Thank you. I'm Rogan Tomquist. I live on Kyler Canyon, 1 mile from Vine and 1 mile from the proposed winery. And I oppose this conditional use permit. This project will disturb 2¾ acres of land. It will permanently cover and destroy the natural environment with buildings, paving, and traffic. This project is 2 miles from a collector road and does not qualify for approval. A winery will add dangerous traffic. There are several blind curves on our narrow road. Our neighbor has had cars crash into their yard. The winery will cause unmitigated damage to our natural and social environment. In spite of the wine industry's romantic image, our society pays for its negative impacts in many ways. I can be absolutely sure that everyone here knows people whose lives have been damaged or destroyed by alcohol. The low wages and undocumented workers employed by the industry leads to social division and taxes our social institutions. The Olson conditional use permit should be rejected outright, but if it goes forward, it must have an environmental impact report. Please defend our Kyler Canyon community. Stay with the county legal ordinance and reject this conditional use permit. I noticed that Jamie picked out several neighbors that support it. Several of those lands don't have people living there, so I'm not quite sure you can call them neighbors. And what's happened in a lot of recently is people are selling out and they're just putting in vineyards, and now they're going for the wineries, but those vineyards are putting fences all the way to their border lines, and they're pushing the animals into the roads, and then we're bringing in traffic to finish them off the animals. So I, you know, the romantic image that's being presented, I'd like to defend the neighborhood itself or the people who live here and the animals and plants that still live here. So thank you for your consideration. Have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you.
I apologize. The next request to speak is Jennifer Hogue. It appears that your line has been unmuted, and you will have 3 minutes to speak.
First, can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good morning, commissioners. We do not completely oppose what the Olson's project is. We think if it was done correctly and in the right way, then it would be perfectly acceptable. We are the property directly south of the suggested site, and in that area is a depression in the landscape, which the direction of the tasting room and the outdoor seated area would be directly coming to our property. We are a small winery, very small. We were given a great deal of restrictions when we applied for a land exemption. And we feel that the same types of restrictions that were imposed upon us or imposed upon Ecluse should be also imposed upon, you know, the new project in question here. We also feel that the hours of 11 to 7 is just entirely too late. we close at 4 o'clock to make sure that there is no noise because people do talk. And despite the fact that they are not requesting special events, anything under 50 people, so in any given day, they could have a group of 50 people and it would be considered industry okay standard. 50 people make a lot of noise. So 7 o'clock is entirely too late. We are by appointment. We feel like being by appointment is important. Respect to the neighbors and respect to the community in general. Also, we want to make sure that if given approval, that any types of approval that are given would be also given to the existing wineries that are already have less approval than what is being requested. There are also some new faces, as as Roger had mentioned earlier, that have bought vineyard properties, and I do suspect that they will be going for wineries at some point in time. So just question is, would the same types of allowances be given and granted to everyone? That is basically it. Other than that, I do think the Olsons would do a terrific job as far as putting together a beautiful property and try to be as respectful as possible. But I think the hours that they're requesting, 11 to 7, 7 days a week, is too many. They're not by appointment. And also, I'm worried about the noise. Even though it's not amplified, they're not requesting amplified music, the noise factor with the tasting room directly pointing to our property, and we live here, by the way. We are very small, and we live on our property. So we are very respectful of noise to the area because we hear it. We can hear the fair. We can hear people talking down the street. Noise really travels here. So anyway, that's it. Other than that, we're for it.
Thank you.
Last request to speak is caller with the last three numbers ending in 616. The host will now attempt to unmute your connection. And you should receive a notification from Zoom that you will have to press.
There it goes.
Oh, there we go. Okay, very good. And if you could please state your name for the record, please, and you will have 3 minutes to speak.
Yes, assuming I'm the one that's online. This is Peter Byrne. And I live at 1275 Kyler Canyon, pretty much adjacent to this project and right behind the existing B&B on Kyler Canyon. My concerns about this project are noise, lights, and traffic. And if it sounds like I'm reading this, is this because I am? Under noise, I'm requesting that there be no amplified music or other amplified noise associated with allowable wine industry events. Or any other time during the year, there should be no amplified music or amplified noise. Noise travels for miles out here due to the open terrain. And considering that this is a conditional use permit for projects that are not supposed to be allowed in ag zoning in the first place, I think that this is a reasonable mitigation request. Restaurant. A restaurant should not be allowed, and food pairing, which conveniently very often frequently turns into restaurants, and which is nothing more than a restaurant, should be limited to daylight hours and to be vacated by 5 p.m., as is the same requirement for the Kyler Ridge Olive Processing / Bone Project adjacent to my parcel. As far as lights go, wine industry event gatherings should be limited to daylight hours only, closing by dusk, as lights from vehicular traffic can be seen for miles and are not a required part of an agricultural operation, none of the vehicular traffic. Also, the county has allowed a B&B project just adjacent to the Onyx project, and it is not fair to me to have them to have to put up with the lights and traffic and noise from a use that is not allowed in the first place. So it's the noise, the restaurant, the lights, we can't have it, I don't think. And there really and truly should be another traffic study done because the last traffic study, I think it was about 20 years ago, and at that time, Kyler Canyon was already maxed out at that time with the traffic. There's been a huge increase in traffic since that time, especially from all the agricultural workers and operations going on out here. So it might be able to be mitigated, but I have some great deal of concerns here, as I just mentioned. Thank you.
Thank you. For any members of the public wishing to speak, this is your last opportunity to speak for this item. You can do so by using the raise hand feature or by pressing star 9 at this time. And I'm seeing no additional requests to speak, Chair.
Thank you. So that will be it for public comment, and bring it back to the Commission for discussions. The notes that I made for staff, the 7 p.m. issue, the lights, and Kyler Canyon condition, could somebody from staff speak to those?
Yes, Holly Phipps, planning staff. As conditioned, the all lights on the winery facility have to be downcasting so that they don't exceed off the property line. Traffic, I will defer to Public Works regarding when the latest traffic study has been done in that area. As far as a restaurant, there's no restaurant proposed. They're proposing to have wine pairings, and wine pairings, this would be considered an incidental use and associated with the tasting room use rather than a restaurant operating with a limited food facility where it's made to order. Wine pairings are typically finger foods that are paired for wine tastings with selected wines for consumption in the tasting room and outdoor area. Noise, industry-wide events have been proposed, but no amplified music is proposed, and it's not part of the project description. That's all I have at this point. If you have additional questions.
Thank you.
Does JR want to say anything about the traffic?
I'm sorry?
Does Public Works want to say anything about traffic, JR?
Commissioner Motari, it appears, he should be on the line. So, JR, we're requesting to unmute your connection.
No, maybe he'll come back in a little while.
Well, I can add additional information about the traffic. In the traffic analysis that was prepared, there was a total of one collision, and that was in 2017. The California Highway Patrol indicated that one collision was within 0.05 miles each way of the site access that has occurred in the past 3 years. A collision is not associated with the project access. Again, the project as a whole will result in 7 peak hour trips and 1 peak hour trip for the tasting room. The latest traffic counts provided by the county shows an estimated 200 average daily trips on Kyler Canyon Road. These traffic volumes indicate that this portion of the roadway is operating at a level of service A based on a roadway level service criteria. And if Kerr Consulting's traffic engineer would like to add to that, please chime in. That concludes my comments.
Thank you.
And this is Jamie Jones, Kerr Consulting. I would like to offer up that Steve Oros, our traffic engineer who prepared the roadway safety analysis, is available and ready to answer any questions of your commission.
Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll start off. If that's okay.
Sure.
I think that a winery at this location is a reasonable use. I mean, there's a winery directly across the street, and there's other ones nearby. There's that olive oil operation nearby as well. It's surrounded by vineyards and so on. I drove out there, and I would note that Kyler Canyon Road is unpaved just a little bit beyond this site, and that Arbor Road is unpaved as well. So the notion that this is going to be, I just wonder about how much capture there's going to be in terms of existing traffic that's going through there. The winery across the street is by appointment only. for example. And rather, if this won't create some kind of critical mass that will draw more people, I don't know. But I don't think that the traffic is significant enough to make a problem in that regard. Holly helped me figure out the water response, so that works for me. And I would agree with the comment that vineyards are a mixed blessing at best, and wineries are as well for our county. We've kind of, in my opinion, kind of overdone it. Not so much because of the alcohol consumption. I mean, we could argue about that. There's clear economic benefits from the wineries, but there also have been environmental and water basin impacts that have been significant, and we're struggling to deal with them. But that's not really the issue before us today. Is that the appropriate land use? It's zoned for it. I think the question really before us is the tasting room. And again, I think that a modest tasting room makes sense at this location. I really appreciate that the applicants have at least contacted and met with the neighbors. I think that's really commendable. But my concern really is the lack of specificity about the scope of events and operations with regard to the tasting room. And I guess I'm just asking the you fellow commissioners, are you comfortable with relying on the ordinance restrictions, or should there be more specific limitations spelled out in the conditions of approval, similar to that table that Holly showed us affecting the other nearby operations, limiting hours of operations, days of the week, spelling out what kinds of things. You know, Ms. Kirk talked about, or Ms. Jones talked about, winemaker dinners and food pairings and stuff like that, which is, you know, in a modest amount of operations would seem reasonable. But do we need to spell any of that stuff out in some kind of condition of approval? That's really more a question for my fellow commissioners there.
What were you thinking of specifically, like the 7 p.m. deadline?
Well, I don't know. I was hoping that we would have some clarity from staff is kind of saying that, don't worry, that the existing ordinance limiting 50 people, no special events, but, you know, these industry-wide events and so on, this will be sufficient. But I noticed in that table that these other nearby operations do have specified days, hours.
Where's the table?
Maybe that's by choice. I mean, what I'm not clear about is that a lot of these things are depending on the on when they decide they want a day off or not.
No, I think these are conditions of approval. I'm not sure.
Right. Can you tell us where that table is you're referring to?
Yeah, it's not in our staff report. Holly showed it in her.
Holly, how about putting that up?
Yeah, I want to note something on that too, if we look at it, and that is that as somebody that works a lot, 4 o'clock and 5 o'clock to have things shut down, it's really difficult to go visit. I mean, I think that if we don't want a lot of people on the road at the same time, we don't have things shut down at the same time.
Good point.
I have the chart up there for you to see what's located there nearby with their times and days of the week.
Holly, Commissioner Ortiz-Legg brings up a good point. Are those their hours of operation, or are those restrictions that were placed on approvals?
Right.
These were restrictions replaced on their conditional use permits.
Okay. So this is what we as a county have put on these other operations right next door.
And yes. That is correct.
Why did staff feel that we didn't have to have similar types of limitations for this particular operation, which seems to be, you know, pretty comparable?
Well, as going forward, as ordinance, we met ordinance standards, and because it was a conditional use permit heard before your commission, and that there would be public testimony. Staff wanted to make sure that we had the input from the community of what they felt was appropriate and what the Planning Commission thought was appropriate for this winery.
Well, what is the size difference? That's you know,
it's comparable to the other wineries.
This winery we're talking about is comparable to Inclusive, say?
It is.
Yeah.
They're all about the same size out there. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
None of them are that large out there, Jay.
No, I realize that. Yeah. But we've got one, the estate wines, 3,000 cases a year. Why was that 3,000 put in, used in that case, and 10,000 put in Inclusive?
The case production was
what 3,000 put in, or is that what they wanted?
That's the question also.
Isn't that just ending what they produce?
Yeah.
The capacity of their facility is 3,000. I don't think anybody mandated it.
Well,
3,000.
Well, that is the question. That is the question. And if they were limited by conditions of approval to 3,000, then you'd have to say, well, why are we approving somebody at 10,000?
Well, there's another aspect to that, Chairman Brown. Many wineries put more emphasis on wine clubs, and, you know, 7,000 cases may go out distributed throughout the United States and Europe even. So you can't tell where it's all going to go, and you can't assume it's all going to go to traffic drinking it on that site.
No, I realize that.
The industry of mailing wine off is tremendously big.
Yeah. Can you go back to that table?
I don't see what the capacity of the winery has anything to do with what we're talking about, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Holly, could you put that
Some
in?
People choose to just sell their wine across the counter, and others sell their wine through the mail and the other facilities.
Well, would it be...
Commissioners, the wineries that we're talking about, they have their own, based on their size and the production rooms, what they can handle and what they're proposing for annual case production. And so that's what they decided was good for a part of their project description coming forward.
Okay.
When researching these past winery projects, it was the days and hours that were scrutinized.
That were restricted.
Yeah.
And if you look at the Ecluse Winery, which is immediately across the street of Kyler Canyon from the subject property we're dealing with, it's 10,000 cases, the same amount. They're allowed to process offside grapes, which is being requested. That seems reasonable. 800 square foot tasting room. This one is a little bit bigger, but comparable. No special events, industry-wide events allowed. It's exactly the same location. The difference really is the days and hours. That one, apparently, when that use permit was approved, it was 4 days per week. And from 11 to 5. And I guess I'm just asking, was that reasonable? And should something exactly across the street with almost exactly the same characteristics be subject to similar restrictions? Because remember, this is not, we're giving an exemption. It's the code, if we were to comply literally with it, the tasting room would not be allowed. And, it has been allowed for the neighbors, but with those restrictions.
Chair Brown, if I may, I do see that Mr. David Graham from Public Works is requesting to speak, and also J.R. Beard has joined the meeting by phone, and he can also participate in the meeting.
Jared?
J.R. Beard.
He's Public Works.
Lovely. Okay. Well, let's kind of get through this discussion. So at Ecluse Winery, the conditions of approval were only for 4 days per week, Thursday to Sunday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Was that was that requested by the applicant to be put into the conditions of approval, or was there an issue on that, or... Because that obviously is a big difference between this winery and the one that Commissioner Molteri is comparing it to. I mean,
the previous use permit, they were restricted to 3 days per week, and they came back in for a new conditional use permit, I believe, increased the days of the week to provide more visitors coming to their site. As with any project, each project is on a case-by-case basis. You know, each project is has their own specific restraints, and during the hearing process, neighbor input. So all of these were fine-tuned during the hearings.
And Mr. Chair, if I might, because we did represent the Ecluse project on their applications, so I'm available for background on those applications as well.
Okay. Well, let's hear from County Public Works on the road issue.
Yes, this is David Graham with Public Works. First off, I want to apologize. We had some connectivity technical issues in our office, so we weren't able to jump on when you deferred to us the first time. So it's exactly how Holly mentioned. Each project is reviewed on a case-by-case basis. Of course, we always try to, you know, treat things consistently. And we do have a process for consistently analyzing projects, and that's the roadway safety analysis. We did request that for this project that Steve Oros, the traffic engineer, prepared. There weren't any issues of note in that safety analysis. The peak hour trips that would be generated by this project were considered to be very minor, and as such, we wouldn't recommend any kind of additional business hour restriction. That's pretty rare that Public Works would recommend that. Sometimes that is placed on a project through the hearing in cases where there is a neighborhood compatibility issue or when there are large events being conducted on the site, and neither of those things are being undertaken at this site. So that is why there aren't any hourly restrictions that we put on there. And at the end of the day, we focused our comments on the access, site of access, and improvements that would be required there.
Yeah, David, the comment about traffic, I guess you guys were disconnected for a while, really wasn't related to the hours of operation. It was just a general comment by the neighbors that the capacity of the road and the curviness of the road made this an incompatible use. And I think you've answered that.
Yeah, correct. I apologize. The curviness of the road actually in this case limits the speed of traffic. We did consult with our transportation division, and that was their thinking as well. So with the improvements that we've recommended at the point of access, we feel that those concerns would be ameliorated.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have another question. And one of the neighbors suggested that this new winery would enjoy benefits in terms of, say, working hours that they were, I guess, denied. And shouldn't they be given, you know, the same lights and 7 p.m. close down time? I mean, would that be something that, because we adopted this application with the hours that it has, that if somebody else across the street perhaps requested, is it something they could easily get?
Well, I think that's really the question that that I'm asking, is that the Ecluse winery is almost exactly the same thing, and it is literally across the street, Kyler Canyon Road, from this location. It's the same distance, same way. And whenever that use permit was approved and then modified, there were limitations on the days and hours. And in this one, we're not applying that. And I guess I'm trying to understand the rationale why this one would be okay to be more liberal when in the past we thought that it needed to be more restrictive immediately across the street from them.
Commissioner Moltari?
Yes.
I think it's interesting because Ms. Jones had noted that she represented that. And, you know, as staff said, you know, each of these has been handled differently because of a number of circumstances. So maybe we should ask, maybe they only asked for so many days. On that. I know there was the conditions on the hour time, but I think we need to go back to that to see if we're apples to apples here on that across the street, because the person across the street's not even hasn't I don't think has even come forward and asked for more. It was the person behind who said they had more restrictions.
Yeah, but same right. Principle, and that's a really good question, and it makes me a little uneasy to consider something that's more inclusive than the one across the street without knowing the background.
Well, should we ask the representative?
Ms. Jones, do you have a comment on that?
Sure. Thank you for the opportunity to provide some input. So the Hoags were Terry Hoag and his winery. They were the first application to come in. I believe that they were approved in 2004 for their request for the tasting room. I think I was a county employee at the time. I remember watching that hearing, and their application was approved for tasting by appointment only. And then in 2006, the Locks came in for an application for a modification to the distance request, and their application at that time was approved for tasting by appointment only as well, and there were some limitations on production. In 2013, we came back in for a revised application, conditional use permit for the Locks for a Clouse Winery, and we only requested two things, and it was to expand the operating hours to the 4 days per week and expand the case production to 10,000 cases. So it wasn't something that was limited intentionally by the Planning Commission. It was a limitation that was put forth by the property owners in their application. And it was the joys of working on Zoom at home, I can pull up my information, and that was supported unanimously by the Planning Commission in 2013.
Yeah, but Jamie, wasn't the days of the week and the hours made a condition of approval?
Well, it was because that reflected the project description.
Well, it doesn't make any difference whether it was the project description or not. It was a condition of approval. I guess.
And we expect, as we put forward a project description, as we are with this application, where we're not requesting a special event program, and we're not requesting amplified music, we're not requesting a restaurant, those are incorporated into the project description to make sure that what occurs is there's a condition to reflect the project description. And I would like to, on the operating hours, I know the 7 o'clock has come up as something of concern, and we did put that in. We were going through our applications to try to determine where that 7 o'clock came from, because we don't remember specifically putting it in the application. And that was on the land use permit. You know, when do you expect employees to be on site? And I believe we put in there from 10 to 7 is what we put in for normal business hours.
And that seems perfectly normal to me in terms of at least employee schedules. So,
and that's what it was intended to capture on the application.
So if the neighbor to the south wanted to say, hey, we also want to stay open later now, they would have to come back in for a conditional use permit amendment or whatever, right? Staff, please.
That is correct.
Okay. What's involved? What would be involved in that?
It would be an amendment to their approved conditional use permit, and then we would notice the neighbors, and we would come back before your planning commission.
Kind of like
that has happened.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's happened once. One of these wineries did that.
Would it be considered probable based on the fact that we granted it to the people across the street? I mean, well, probably go through based on that. I mean, is that judgment enough in of itself?
This is Alexandria Fowler. I don't think we could speak to what would be the staff's analysis for a project that's not in. However, given the information that we've heard, I'm not seeing a particular issue with the hours, but we would have to evaluate that project on the merits of that application.
I understand what you're saying, but based on what you see now, unless something weird comes up, it would be a pretty reasonable finding to make that change.
I mean, I appreciate that, and I'm concerned at this point in time. Small businesses and businesses trying to do more and offer and store and all that. I really think it's important for us to support this kind of stuff. I really like the fact that they went to the neighbors and they brought down the size of the project in the first place, because it is a relatively small street. And when I was out there, there was a neighbor to the east that had a post pounding. I'm not sure if it was actually this project, but they were pounding posts in regards to some other vineyard work. So, I mean, noise in ag, it happens, one way or another.
Good point.
It was, I'm used to post pounding machines from solar, so it goes for quite a ways. But at any rate, I think this is a great project as it is at this point.
Okay, would you like to turn that into a motion?
I don't know if we're ready yet.
Let me make that. I'd like to make one comment. Back to the traffic situation is something we need to be aware of. And we've heard some people that live toward the town on Cotter Canyon Road, and I understand that's a little twisty and windy. However, because of the plethora of wineries on Highway 46 from 101 West, the usual way for tour buses, limousines, et cetera, and public will come in through Arbor Road, because their tour runs along Highway 46 with all the wineries there. Then they come in Arbor Road to catch this area of wineries. So I'd say the bulk of the traffic, even though it's a dirt road, is going to use Arbor Road rather than start out on Cotter Canyon Road to go wine tasting, because they hit those other ones first.
That makes sense. I mean, I think that in all toll, this is a note to Public Works, that we have road safety issues that we need to take into consideration throughout the county in regards to our wine tasting business. I mean, I've brought this up before when we have the cannabis discussions, and yet, it is part of our industry here, and I think that safety first, we can take precautions and do things in order to help keep the road safe with speed limits, etc.
Chair Brown, I would like to just
can look to approving this.
I do have Mr. David Grimm. I thought he had his hand up for a second. There it is.
Okay.
And just to acknowledge the commission's comments on that, we absolutely hear you. County does have a policy in place specific to safety issues in rural areas and wineries and so forth. So we are administering that policy, and we do absolutely look at these issues during times of project review. If you have any specific issues or concerns, feel free to contact our office.
Thank you.
Okay, I am. I think I'm comfortable. I at least there is a path for neighbors if they want to stretch their hours to at least meet this application conditions. I mean, it sounds like it's doable, and it would be doable, I think, just on a fairness basis, with that, with not a lot of work on findings. So, if you guys don't want to make the motion, I guess I could. But
I just have one more question about the hours of operation. I'm looking at the conditions of approval and the project description in the conditions, and I don't see hours of operation listed here. Is there?
You're correct, Commissioner Moltari, that they have not been added into the project description. Right. We normally don't do that with wineries because they normally, summer and winter hours, you know, sure. 5 p.m. in the winters and later in the summer hours.
But we did on the ones across the street. At least
for
the tasting room. Right.
Okay. That is correct.
Should we, in your opinion, staff, should we do that in the condition of approval for this one? Or just leave it in, you know, wherever else it documents the hours of operation in the staff report? I mean, what do we have to do here?
We could certainly add timelines for the hours of operation, and if your commission would like to do so. And also, to make it you guys feel more comfortable, we could also add no special events allowed and no amplified music allowed. We would just need a maybe 4-minute recess.
Okay.
Monday through weekly hours, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Is that something you guys are?
No, they want 7 p.m.
Yeah.
I mean, I see no reason why not.
Right.
What I said before is if somebody else wanted 7, yeah, they'd have to do some paperwork, but they would probably get 7 hours. It's not, so, you know.
It's their prerogative.
Yes.
Okay. I would be a lot more comfortable saying yes if there was limited, if the conditions or the project description said specifically that the hours of operation are 11 to 7. I think 7's reasonable. And that the there would be no special events and no amplified music. If those were added to the project description explicitly or the conditions of approval, then I think I could comfortably vote yes for this.
I agree.
So, staff, is that simple enough? Can you just go with that? Or do we have to take a break?
I think I have it done right now.
Okay.
Public access to the site. I'll bring it up, share my screen. Public access to the site for a tasting room shall be restricted to a total of 7 days per week, Monday through Sunday, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. And get rid of that. No special events allowed, no amplified noise allowed.
Okay. Mr. Moltari, is that good enough for you?
It is. I'm just a little, yes, it is. But I just I find it curious that in the analysis, we didn't take into account in the staff report or in our discussion explicitly that there was nearby restrictions on operations and that those were the conditions that were approved in order to allow this, which is not allowed by right and required use permits. And it seems like we should, I would prefer consistency, but I think this works for me. Anyway, so I don't want to waste any more time on that from my end.
Okay. Now,
Mr. Chairman, this is your territory. If you aren't comfortable making the motion, I will.
Why don't you go ahead, Don? I'd rather the commission do it.
Okay, we'll do then. I move that we adopt the native deck according to CEQA and approve conditional use permit DRC 2019-00070 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B, and inclusive of the approval 1, E, and F.
Second. I'll do the second. Can I have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Brown?
Yes.
Commissioner Moltari?
Yes.
And Commissioner Ortiz-Legg?
Yes.
The motion passes.
Thank you.
And I just want to say one last thing. And I don't want to give staff a hard time about that. I didn't mean it, my comments, to be that way. It's just I'm looking for consistency in these.
Yes.
You know, that's all.
Yeah, I have a little empty feeling in my stomach about it also. It's a weird situation. And I hope that those other wineries around there, if they want to do the same thing, they'll get it through in a streamlined process. Okay. Next item.
Hearing item number 5 is a hearing to consider a request by HDFD Investments LLC to amend approved condition of approval 1G of recorded track 3091. County file number DRC 2020-00081, supervisorial district number 3, Young Choi, project manager. And if there are any members of the public wishing to comment on this item, use the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or by pressing *9 if you are joining us by phone at this time. This is in order to be ready to be called at the public comment portion of the hearing. Please continue with your presentation, Mr. Choi. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Brown, members of Planning Commission, and members of the public. My name is Young Choi with Planning and Building Department. Here today we have an item, DRC 2020-00081, which is a request which is to modify condition of parole 1G of the recorder's track 3091, SUV 2015-00026. The condition of approval 1G limits the use as a vacation rental to only the studio unit only. And as written in the condition, the studio unit is the only unit allowed to be utilized as a vacation rental. And I'll go back to our slide and share with some of the history of the recorded track. So the track 3091, SUB 2015-00026, authorized to subdivide and construct 8 residential units in 4 different buildings, ranging in size from 300 square feet to about 1,200 square feet. The 300 square foot unit is the studio unit that's in question today. This was approved by the Planning Commission on August 25th of 2016, and the map was recorded on July 23rd of 2018 on Book 37 of page 78 to 80 of the county maps. This project is located in Avila Beach, located within the residential multifamily land use category. This is the aerial view. It is being constructed as we speak right now, and it is located on the First Street, at the corner of First Street and San Antonio Street. A little background of the condition where it originated was that during the public comment at the Planning Commission meeting in August 25th of 2016, a concern for vacation rental was raised. And before the approval, Planning Commissioner added the condition 1G, limiting the use of the vacation rental only to the studio unit. To go through our different ordinances, Section 2106060 of the Real Property Division Ordinance does allow for modification. However, no changes are being made to the condition that are related to Real Property Division Ordinance. Now, change the approved project within the Coastal Zone Land Use Ordinance, Section 2302038, allows changes to the approved development plan subject to a new development plan. And right now we're here with a new development plan, DRC 2020-00081, as the changes are only related to the use of the site, which is a vacation rental. I'd like to share and give you a little bit more information about the vacation rental standards in Avalette Beach. I understand that many of the location standards go through a minor use permit process, which is planning permit hearing, then appeal to the Board of Supervisors. So your commission may not be so aware of the location standard and vacation rental standards in Avalette Beach. So within Avalette Beach, it does state that not within 50 foot of another parcel with a residential vacation rental and or other visitor serving accommodation is allowed. However, this standard can be modified through a minor use permit. The current concentration of vacation rental in this neighborhood exceeds the limit set by the residential vacation rental ordinance. Here you can see the current project site. And within 50 feet, we see three different existing vacation rentals and a visitor-serving location. The one right in front of those is a little bit more than 50 feet, therefore was not included as part of the calculation for existing vacation rental on site. There has been several vacation rental issues that were raised during the in the past our hearings in both Planning Department hearing and Board of Supervisor hearing for that. So the existing concentration of vacation rental is already impacting the residential character of Avalette Beach. And these concerns include noise, parking overflow, and regular return of visitors who are not familiar with the residential neighborhood of Avalette Beach. It does diminish the quality of life enjoyed by the permanent residents, and it does transform the character of the neighborhood from residential to visitor serving and contribute to cumulative impacts such as noise, street parking, and non-residential traffic in a residential neighborhood. The intent of the vacation rental ordinance was to limit vacation rental to preserve existing residential neighborhood. Before you today, I brought some options for you, what would happen with the result of either denying or approval of the approval of the modification. So should your commission deny the permit, it would be a denial of the modification. There will be no changes to Track 3091, SUV 2015-00026. And this will be consistent with the original findings, encouraging a safe, healthy, and livable community that were found at the original hearing of the Planning Commission. Should your council approve the modification, all units within 3991 would be subject to vacation rental ordinance. Because, like I mentioned, there are three existing vacation rental and visitor serving accommodation within 50 feet. These unit, individual unit, would be subject to a minor use permit for distant modification. With that, it is the staff recommendation to deny the development plan and coastal development plan DRC 2020-00081 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A. Staff is here to answer any questions that your commission may have, and we do have the applicant, Mr. Eric Vasquez, here today to answer any of your questions today. Thank you.
Okay, commissioners.
I have a question of staff.
Sure.
Young Choi, is there any difference? Does the Avila Valley Advisory Council have any different feelings than they did on August 25th, 2016?
So as listened to staff report, they still remain the same, that they do not want additional vacation rental in this neighborhood. And they supported the staff recommendation of denying the permit, of denying the modification of the existing permit.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions by commissioners?
Just one staff. One quick one, Mr. Choi.
Yes.
Since the original approval allowed the studio apartment to be used as a vacation rental, they don't have to go through a separate MUP, do they?
As written in the condition, it explicitly states that it could be utilized as a vacation rental unit. It does not explicitly allow the use as of the student unit to be a vacation rental. So
they would have to get a minor use permit to.
That is the staff's interpretation of the original condition of approval as written.
I was just curious. Thank you.
Okay. Applicant?
We do have Mr. Vasquez participating in the meeting as a attendee. Mr. Vasquez, we will now attempt to unmute your connection and if you have any comments.
Yes, can you hear me fine?
Yes.
Thank you, commissioners, and thank you, Mr. Troy, as well, because I think you did a very good job presenting. I think the issue for us is very simple. The vacation rental ordinance is in place. All we're asking for is the opportunity to go through the process. The way the project is now, it was just pointed out, the smaller apartment does not have the ability to go via rental. It still has to go through the process. All we would like is the opportunity for the other units to have that chance. So we're not today asking to be a rental. We just want to have the opportunity to ask. Things change over time. People buy and sell houses, and they can withdraw applications to be a rental. So what's within 50 feet today may not be the case in 30, 40 years from now. Maybe the policies of the county change. We don't know. So we just would like that opportunity. If the policy of the county is to not want vacation rentals, I think that should be done at the policy level, not at the individual house level. And I would like the commission to consider that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Do we have any?
We do have pre-recorded messages and requests.
Pre-recorded. All right.
Okay. Very good. So I will begin with the pre-recorded messages we have received for this item following live public comment. And for any member of the public wishing to speak on this item, you can do so by using the raise hand feature or by pressing star 9.
Hello, this is Ann Brown, B-R-O-W-N, calling regarding the agenda item number 5 on the Planning Commission meeting on October 22nd. The file number is DRC 2020-0081. I wish to support the staff report, which recommends denial of the request of the the project owner, because it would mean that the vacation rental unit, which was allowed under the previous permit, could be used for one of the larger units. And because of the parking problems in Avila, the AVAC made the recommendation to deny their request, and I'm of the same mind. It's important that the studio be the only unit in that project which has a vacation rental possibility. The chances are that there would be fewer parking problems with a studio, perhaps just one car, whereas with any of the other units, there could be two or three cars, depending on how many people rent the unit. So I'll appreciate the Planning Commission supporting staff denial recommendation for this request. My home phone is 805-595-7525 if you wish to get in touch with me. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Jack Keyes. It's J-A-C-K, K-E-E-S-E. And I am calling regarding agenda number 5, DRC 2020. -00081 that is on the October 22nd, 2020 Planning Commission agenda. I am against the amendment to allow the 8 residential units to be used as vacation rentals. The subject property is in a single-family residential area and should not be a vacation rental property. If approved, the subject property will effectively be a hotel with no on-site management, which should not be allowed. I am against the amendment, and I hope that they deny the approval of the amendment. Thank you.
The meeting date is October 22nd, Thursday. It's item number 5. My name is Sandra Gillespie, and my husband, Val Gillespie, S-A-N-D-R-A Gillespie, G-I-L-L-E-S-P-I-E, and Val, V-A-L Gillespie. We would like to comment that we are opposed to changing the Airbnb regulation for property being developed on San Antonio. It was originally to have one Airbnb in the unit, and I believe the applicant is requesting that it be for the other units. There's 7 other units as well, and we are opposed to doing that based on the parking limitations that already exist, and it would heavily impact that neighborhood. There's not adequate parking for that kind of activity. Plus, the area, the plant, the original restrictions on Airbnb should be upheld. Thank you very much. Bye.
That concludes the pre-recorded messages, and we do have one request to speak from Fred Vernaccia. We are attempting to unmute your connection, and you will have 3 minutes to speak, and you should receive a notification from Zoom that the host is requesting. There you are. You will have 3 minutes to speak.
Ready?
Yes.
Okay. My name is Fred Vernaccia. We own the home at 233 First Street, which is the home that's sandwiched between the motel, the vacation rental at 257 First Street, the said project, and then the other, the corner project that is also zoned as a vacation rental. When Mr. Hunter originally proposed this plan and came to visit us, he made a commitment that there would be no vacation rentals there. Clearly, you know, at the time he said they're going to be condominiums, they're all going to be long-term rentals. Well, here we are, you know, with a change of plans. If any unit is allowed to become a vacation rental, you're basically saying then all units can become a vacation rental because it is impossible to police and monitor. Case in point is the project at 257, which is our other neighbor that has 4 units on it. One is allowed to be vacation rental, but I can assure you that at least 2-3 of those units are often rented at the same time. And because the commission or the planning did not put a restriction on saying this unit or that unit must be the vacation rental, it's basically an unmonitored hotel. So if you want to look at an example of what could happen if you were to allow this project to have a rotating or any vacation rental, all you have to do is look at the project at 257 and you'll recognize what a disaster that has become. Next, the other problem is, or let's also highlight the fact that this project is not approved for a vacation rental. It says that if you're going to apply for vacation rental, and if that time comes along where other houses are no longer zoned or should be allowed to have vacation, and you meet the 50-foot requirement, then you can apply, and you can only apply for that studio. Okay, so the applicant's not asking that the studio that's currently allowed to have a permit be changed to the any project or any house on that project. There is not an allowed permit on this project, okay, and for good reason. Lastly, the bottom line is that this project fails to meet the zoning requirements for a vacation rental, and as you can hear from all the other neighbors that have testified here and left messages, and I also have sent in a letter, these vacation rentals are a nightmare for anyone who lives there. It is unfair to have someone who doesn't live there in the project to be able to just say, I'm just going to turn my place in Avila into a money-making machine, and the hell with the people that live there, because that's basically what's going to happen here. So in summary, I support staff's finding that this project not be approved for vacation rental, or I should say not be allowed to change its future application process to anything other than the studio. Because as Ann Brown mentioned, the parking is a major issue. And if any one of these other units were allowed to be a vacation rental, the city zoning allows each bedroom and another room to be used to rent, which means that each bedroom would have a car and two people minimum. So therefore, a two or three bedroom, let's say you got a three bedroom unit, that's basically going to add four cars to Avila for one vacation unit.
You're going to have to wrap it up pretty quick.
Okay. It basically, in summary, I support staff, and any approval beyond that studio would be a disaster. And if in 30 years it's allowed, well, then let's allow it in 30 years, but let's not do it now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any member of the public wishing to speak, please do so at this time. And I'm seeing no additional requests to speak.
Okay, so we closed public comment. And questions of commissioners, to staff? Any?
Yeah, I'm curious as to, Mr. Choi, when a building does come off the list, do people go on a waiting list then to become a vacation rental? But it would have to have been done. How does it work? Please.
I think the question you're mentioning is when the other approved vacation rental is no longer in use and when people could apply for those. No, we do not have any wait list. Generally, these vacation rental and the how we have the visitor serving accommodation is through a business license. All of these require TOT, transient occupancy tax requirement, and that's how we get notified if the vacation rental is active or not. However, in areas of Cambria and Cayucos, a lot of those has been grandfathered in, and we are aware that those are not in use. However, those property have any right at any time to resume their business. Therefore, it's presumed that any of these lodging business that we see on our layer with a business license, they could at any time be a business rental as long as their business license is maintained.
I see. All right, thank you.
My comment would be one that Commissioner Campbell touched on, is that the steering committee, the Avila steering committee, is still not in favor of doing this. I mean, the sentiment that exists right now is the same sentiment that was in place when they got their first approvals. So nothing's changed, the conditions, the crowding and parking and so on, and the people that were against more vacation rentals are probably still the same people that live there right now. And
yep.
I don't want to abuse them by making changes to their original requests and concerns.
Whether it's Cambria, Cayucas, or even the Los Osos issues, and this one, it's really something that people are grappling with. There's no doubt. Very challenging and not well received at this point. And I think that staff has done a good job in having to go through this process, but also to recommend the denial.
That's where I would be tending myself.
Yeah, I agree too. I appreciate the applicant's argument that they just be treated like everyone else. But on the other hand, just a few years ago when this was approved, the requirement was that this be residential and kept residential with the exception of the possibility of the studio. And I think the commissioners at that time, I think Commissioner Campbell was part of the process at that time with Commissioners Meyer and Topping. I respect the judgment that they made and what the neighbors and the advisory council have said too. So I would agree with staff's analysis and recommendation.
And Commissioner Campbell, you might have a motion.
Well, how about Commissioner Lay? That's her district.
Okay.
It is my district, so I will move to have the commission deny the development plan, coastal development permit, DRC 2020-00081, based on the findings in the reports that we deny this request application.
Don, do you want to second that?
I'll second it.
Okay. Would you call the roll, please?
Commissioner Ortiz Legg?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
Commissioner Moltari?
Yes.
And Chairman Brown?
Yes.
The motion passes.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
When I notice we have one item left and it's almost noon, I wonder if it's the pleasure of the commission to just power through or take a break.
I'd like to get through it.
Yes, yeah. let's get through. Okay.
So I make a motion then that we allow the meeting to go through the noon hour.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Could you announce the next item, please?
Hearing item number 6 is a hearing to consider a request by Franco DeSeco to amend the official maps, parts 3 of the coastal land use element, county file number LRP 2019-00001, supervisorial district number 2, project manager Jennifer. I'm sorry, Jennifer Gutschow. And any members of the public wishing to comment on this item, please use the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or by pressing *9 if you are joining us by phone at this time. This is in order to be ready to be called at the public comment portion of the hearing. Please continue with your presentation, Ms. Gutschow.
Thank you, Ramona. I just want to make sure everyone can hear me and see my screen. Wonderful. Thank you. Good morning, Chair Brown and Planning Commissioners. My name is Jennifer Gutschow, and I'm a senior planner. Today, I will be reviewing for you Franco DeSeco's application for a general plan amendment, project number LRP 2019-0001.
Jennifer, can you please get closer to the mic, please?
Yes. Go like this, I guess. Is that better?
A little bit. Not like when you started out.
Okay. Please stop me if you can't hear me. I'll speak up a little bit. Does that help?
A little
sure.
Better.
Wonderful. So the presentation outline will start with a project description, then review the process for approval, do an overview of the background, an analysis of the proposal with the environmental review, as well as any other concerns that have come up with our correspondence. And then finally, we'll do a recommendation. Just double checking that everyone can hear me.
Yes.
Thank you. So project description is that today we have a hearing to consider a request by Franco DeSeco to amend the official maps, part 3 of the coastal land use element by rezoning 0.4 acres from commercial retail to residential single family in the Cayucas Urban Reserve line. The project site is located at 2958 Orville Avenue in Cayucas, about 200 feet from Highway 1 in District 2. The process included an authorization by the Board of Supervisors in June of 2019. Today we're having our hearing at the Planning Commission, and then we'll continue on with a planned hearing item on December 8th at the Board of Supervisors, with a final action on December 15th of 2020. Following that, we will continue to the Coastal Commission in 2021. This is a vicinity map to show you the location of the parcel. You'll see that the subject parcel is outlined in black. It's located along Old Creek Road and Ocean Boulevard, and next to Cabrillo Highway, or Highway 1 as we know it. The land use category map will show you that it is surrounded by residential uses, including single family to the east of the property and multifamily to the north, and then along the coastline also single family. This is a commercial retail property at the moment. This is the assessor's map. The parcels are highlighted in yellow. So some background on this project. This is a 0.4-acre parcel with a historic use as a gasoline station and then related commercial uses. In October of 2008, the county approved a mixed-use project with four residential condominium buildings and an 18-unit hotel. This was appealed to the Coastal Commission. The Coastal Commission staff and the applicant worked together to make changes to the project, and that included a reduction to two residential homes and then a 19-room hotel with underground parking. However, this was denied on February 2018 after strong community opposition. In the meantime, the applicant has submitted this proposal, and in addition, they received a demolition permit in July of 2020 for the 1,100-square-foot building, which housed the commercial use previously. Currently, the property is now vacant. Our analysis of the proposal included that the proposed change to residential single family is compatible with surrounding residential neighborhood, that the project would help meet the demand for additional housing, that the 2009 Estero plan, when it was adopted, the commercial gas station was an existing commercial retail use, and in response, the parcel was designated with a land use category that matched the existing use of the property. It is already located near two commercial areas. The visitor serving and other commercial-oriented central business district is located a mile and a half north of this property. And then there's a small commercially zoned area that's also a quarter mile south. Those are both shown on the project here. You'll see that the central business district is on your left side of the screen. And then down about, it was two and a quarter miles, is the subject property. And then further south is the commercial second area. In our environmental review, we were able to do a mitigated negative declaration that included mitigation for the tribal resources. In 2005, there was a surface investigation of the property, but there was no evidence of concern. However, it is located in a sensitive archaeological area, and so we are recommending a monitoring plan. This will include crew education, which will be education of and protocol for treating any unanticipated finds, as well as construction monitoring, where they would retain a qualified archaeologist and tribal representative. If there are any findings of significance, there will be a stop work evaluation by archaeological representative and tribal consultant until they have clearance. We have received some correspondence since the time of the staff report, and those included the Environmental Health and State Department of Toxic Substances. Their concerns were that there is soil cleanup and additional remediation making sure that that's reviewed upon application for land division and construction permit. The California Coastal Staff Commission staff also suggested that this parcel is not a visitor-serving commercial designated area. Pardon me. The California Coastal Commission staff wanted to see this parcel as a visitor-serving commercial area. However, we have found that this parcel is not a visitor-serving commercial designated area on the Estero land use maps, and further, that the visitor-serving areas, as I showed previous, those are located north in the Central Business District. And then finally, the Cayucas Citizens Advisory Committee also shared the same concern with soil remediation and building design parameters. But as stated above, this will be investigated further at the time of land division and or construction permit request. And with that, a recommendation is that we recommend the Board of Supervisors and Planning Commission approve the general plan amendment to the official maps, Part 3 of the coastal land use element, by rezoning 0.4 acres from commercial retail to residential single family in the Cayucas Urban Reserve line, as shown in Attachment 2 and based on the findings listed in Attachment 1. And with that, we staff is available for any questions that you have. In addition, we do have the applicant's representative, Ms. Judy Apple, is available to answer questions, but also would like the opportunity to review the project with you as well, and has a short presentation for you to consider as part of this as well, and she's available. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, commissioners, do you have questions that you'd like to put to staff right now, or would you like to
go? I'll ask one quick question, Jennifer. I'm assuming with what you just showed us that there's not been a phase one environmental study because there was a gas station there. Is that correct?
Well, we did do the CEQA evaluation, and we did find
I'm talking about drilling down and testing soil way down. Gas stations usually cause a big problem sometime with leaky, you know, over the years. That's what I mean by phase one environmental has not been done then. Apparently.
Not that we're aware of.
And that would be a condition of approval, I'm certain.
Yeah, I'm sure it is, but it could weigh heavily on what they end up doing with it and the cost of doing it.
Either way.
And Commissioner Campbell, I will say that we did speak with the Department of Toxic Substances specifically about that, and they told me that they would not be reviewing that level of detail until they had an actual construction permit or subdivision request. They also suggested that I review the databases, which are both EnviroStar on their website for any already recorded issues with toxic substances in the parcel. And that came up with a negative, or it did not show that there were any concerns.
Okay.
Thank you.
Can we go on to the applicant, commissioners?
Yes.
So we do have Ms. Apple joining the meeting, and Ms. Apple, you should have the opportunity to share your screen, and if you'd like to present your PowerPoint presentation to the commission.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Chair Brown and the commissioners, my name is Judy Apple, and I'm speaking on behalf of Franco DeSico. I wanted to start with just a brief timeline of his original commercial project. The property was purchased in 1999. He had his first pre-application meeting with the county planning in 2004. The project application was submitted to the Department of Planning in May of 2006. The neighbors opposing the project formed the Concerned Citizens of Cayucas in 2007. They collected over 1,200 signatures from residents and part-time residents opposing this project. The Board of Supervisors approved the project in October of 2008. The Coastal Commission took jurisdiction in August of 2009. A de novo hearing was scheduled for September 9th of 2016 in Newport Beach. On September 8th, the Central Coast staff postponed the hearing because of the many late emails opposing the project. In the final hearing on February 7th of 2018, the Coastal Commission denied the commercial project. So Franco spent many years trying to get a commercial project built on that site. The original project design included a restaurant and convenience store for neighborhood serving. The concerned citizens wanted them removed and were glad when Franco eliminated them. I wanted to share some of the neighbors' comments that were sent to the Coastal Commission in 2018. First, mass and scale of the motel is not compatible with the neighborhood, and the motel belongs downtown. We want to retain the unique character of the neighborhood. This is not urban infill. This is a residential neighborhood that happens to have one old lot zoned as CR. The CR predates the majority of the neighborhood development of predominantly single-family residential. And then commercial business will bring excess traffic to on Old Creek and Ocean Boulevard into residential neighborhoods. We do not want to have a commercial enterprise operating in a residential area. This section of town is a residential neighborhood. There are no commercial buildings anywhere in close proximity. Ocean Boulevard is well known as a bike route and a pedestrian path. There are no sidewalks or bike lanes for commercial traffic. And the last one is, this is a quiet single-family home community without any commercial properties around. Commercial business will bring additional traffic to our extremely peaceful neighborhood. There were over probably 50 more comments that were sent and spoken at that hearing. As Jennifer said, this parcel is the only one zoned commercial retail from Old Creek Road north to Obispo Avenue. All other parcels on Ocean Boulevard and west of Orville are zoned residential multifamily. And then all other parcels east of Orville are residential single family. This is why we feel it is time to change the zoning to residential single family to be compatible with the neighborhood. And thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Okay. Do we have any public comment?
Okay. We did not receive any pre-recorded messages for this item. However, members of the public wishing to speak on this item can do so by using the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or by pressing star 9. And I'm seeing no request to speak, Chair.
Okay. So with that, we'll close public comment. And comments from commissioners?
I have one. Jennifer or Ms. Apple, did you consider multifamily zoning instead of single family, or is that a fight that you don't want to take on?
Jennifer?
Yes, so I can respond to that. Thank you, Commissioner Tartmatari. We did not speak specifically about multifamily, and the reason why is right now multifamily would be allowed in the project, but it would have to be secondary to the commercial use.
Right.
So as far as I know, that is not what the applicant wanted to do. I think what they're trying to do is do the single family so that the neighborhood, since that's what they requested.
All right.
And Ms. Apple, I don't know if you have anything additional you'd want to add to that.
No, we are just trying to basically be a part of what the neighborhood is, and all the neighbors around us all really requested a single family, even in the multifamily zone that goes all the way down Ocean Boulevard. The majority, I don't know if there's any multifamily really there. They're all basically single family homes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. You know, I'm really familiar with this property. I drive by there very frequently going up Old Creek Road, and I've seen it evolve over time, trying to be different kinds of commercial, outdoor sales and nursery. Nothing really worked. And the owners tried to do what the Coastal Commission wanted, at least in theory, and then went through all of this multi-year, what would you say, hassle, trying to figure out what would actually work, ironically being approved by or recommended by the county and the coastal staff, only to be overturned by the commission itself. So if this is what they want to try to do, if this is what the commission, the community wants, I'm in favor of letting them try to go back to the commission and get this rezoned. In theory, it would be a real nice place for what they originally proposed, you know, a small, modest inn. There's a light right there. There's a beach across the street from the highway. It seemed like a reasonable use in the abstract, but we know that these coastal communities, and Cayucas in particularly, and Cambria, actually all the coastal communities, become very protective of the existing character. So I would support the staff's recommendation and recommend this on to the Board of Supervisors.
My comments are very much like Commissioner Moltari's. 14 years trying to use this property. It's kind of sad that he got turned down. I can rationalize the commercial zoning, however, because as Commissioner Moltari says, we use that to get to from the eastern part of the country. We use that road to go to Cayucas all the time. So it didn't surprise me that there was this, you know, a little commercial corner there as you get onto the main drag. But apparently that's not going to be the case. And I think after 14 years, we need to let this man get ahead with this thing as quick as we can.
I agree, too. It's not a difficult decision to make. I mean, it's one of how many dozen single-family homes in a row. And so...
That's a... multifamily stuff there too, and I just express my same condolences to the applicant for having such a runaround for so long. I was looking forward to seeing something go up there. I've bought furniture there. I bought other things in that location, and it's a real easy place to dip into. But yeah, if this is what they want, I'm all for it as well.
Okay.
And I'd make a motion that we recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval of the amendments to the official map, the coastal land use and circulation elements from commercial retail to single family.
Mr. Ortiz, you want to second that?
I'll second it.
Okay. Call the roll, please.
Commissioner Moltari?
Yes.
Commissioner Ortiz Legg?
Yes.
Commissioner Campbell?
Yes.
And Chairman Brown?
Yes.
The motion passes.
Okay.
Very good.
Thank you.
We got through it. I'd like to take a motion to take all testimony and correspondence into the board, to the record.
So moved.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, second. I think we have one motion and,
double,
and three seconds.
Double down.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. And then a motion to adjourn to the next regularly scheduled meeting.
Don't move.
November 12th.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. We actually got through quite a few items.
Good meeting, Chairman.
Yeah, I'm really worried about this last one in December, though. It sounds like it's just, it is going to be a backbreaker.
Have some. Would somebody's wife make some Christmas cookies for us?
We will. What? I can make Christmas cookies. What do you mean?
We will definitely make sure that you guys have treats and that you're fully stocked and ready to go. And we will do our best to get through the items as quickly as possible.
That was a pretty sexist statement I made. Somebody's wife.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, just for that, you're going to eat my cookies and like them.
All right.
See you guys a couple weeks.
Thank you. Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you.